This is episode 496 on the Hidden Why podcast with best-selling author Peter Shankman.
If you can't change the people around you, change the people around you.
G'day and welcome to the Hidden Why podcast. Lee Martinuzzi here, the host of the show. Guys, thank you for tuning in today. Hope you're well. Hope you're enjoying your day. Guys, I've got a spectacular interview to bring you today, like all my interviews, of course. Today's interview guest is Peter Shankman. Really interesting insight into ADHD, productivity and focus. So he's the author of several books, including his newest book, Faster Than Normal, Turbocharge Your Focus, Productivity and Success with the Secrets of the ADHD Brain. Peter Shankman is a spectacular example of what happens when you merge the power of pure creativity with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, and also a dose of adventure, and make it work to your advantage. He is an author, entrepreneur, and a keynote speaker, and he helps shift and find radical new ways to think about customer service, social media, PR, marketing, advertising, and of course, ADHD as well. In this newest book of his, Peter shares his hard-won insights and daily hacks for making ADHD a secret weapon for living a full and deeply satisfying life. He finishes the show with saying, you know, that people with ADHD, you're not broken. And it's really just a new way to look at how to use ADHD to your advantage, how to use that creative energy to really pursue your ideas and to live a life with greater meaning. It's not only beneficial for people with ADHD, it's beneficial for all of us. I think there's a lot of secrets and insights that he shares within this interview that can help us really hone our focus and figure out what's important in our life and what's not, and how to avoid those pitfalls as well, so we can put more energy into our creative ideas and on exploring the paths that give us more meaning, that are more important to a fulfilling life. So a really interesting chat, guys. I'd love to hear what you think. You can jump onto thehiddenwhy.com, episode 496, and leave your comments in the comments fields there. You can also connect with Peter Shankman. His links are in the show notes. Say g'day, reach out, pick up a copy of his book. If you use the show note link to the book, that goes through Amazon or Audible. That certainly helps support the show as well. So do that, guys. Check it out. Let me know what you think. You can also jump onto social media. Check out the links there. You can connect with me online. TheHiddenWhyGuy@gmail.com. And on social media, Facebook is my preferred method of communication there if you'd like to reach out and say g'day. Other than that, guys, enjoy the show with best-selling author Peter Shankman. Good morning, Peter. Welcome to the Hidden Why podcast. How are you going?
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, mate. You're a busy man. Busy man. And I can see your profile and all about who you are and what you do. And it seems like you've got your fingers in a lot of different pies there. How do you do it all?
It's fun to stay busy, you know. I get bored easily. I think a lot of it, you know, has to do with whatever excites me. You know, we tend to like what we do when what we do excites us. So I tend to focus on doing those things.
Doing what excites you. Okay.
Yeah.
Perhaps easier said than done. I mean, that's certainly my ambition, is to wake up every day doing things that excite me. And, you know, when I do that, I know I can do more. I can really do a heck of a lot. But when it's stuff that's boring and I don't like, it seems to be more of a drain on my energy and I guess my ambition as well. So you talk a lot about ADHD, and I know that's a lot of your work is sort of revolves around that condition. I don't really know much about ADHD other than what I hear in the media. Can you just describe that for us and what it is?
ADHD is basically the body's inability to produce as many of the three sort of focus chemicals that normal people produce. Those chemicals are dopamine, serotonin, and adrenaline. So a lot of times what winds up happening is people with ADHD, they tend to, you know, it looks like they're bouncing all around the place. They're actually looking, without realizing it, looking for something to excite them, something to get those chemicals up. When they find them, you know, they do things they love doing, they keep doing it. For instance, a great example would be, you know, growing up in school, I loved to read. Hated math, loved to read. And so I was always great. You know, my math was always phenomenal, or my English, my reading was always phenomenal. It was some of the best stuff I could do. My math, not so much, right? And as such, you know, I wasn't such a huge fan of math class, and I tended to sort of drift off, and I was looking for something else to excite me. You know, that led to me being the class clown and making jokes and speaking out of turn and things like that. And over time, I was able to create new things to sort of you know, get that attention up. I didn't realize at the time, but I was sort of self-medicating, you know, whether I was speaking out in class or making people laugh, whatever, you know, over time that would translate to starting my own companies or skydiving, training and running Ironman triathlons, all those things that I would do that kept me excited, right? It was, you know, that was what I was doing. I was sort of blowing up my own brain, as it were, hacking my own brain.
Okay, so those chemicals you talked about, dopamine, adrenaline, and there was one more. What was that?
Serotonin.
So with ADHD, you have people with ADHD have a lesser ability to release those chemicals. Is that what it is?
They have less ability to make them. So we, you know, our brains don't make them as normally as other people do. So, you know, we run out of them quicker. So we tend to look for them in different ways. And so for me, you know, I tend to get them by doing things that I otherwise, you know, that normal people wouldn't do. Normal people, you know, I trained for my first 5K race and then signed up for an Ironman right after it. You know,
So you're a bit more risk-taking and adventurous in that sense?
Yeah, but not in a negative way. I'm risk-taking and adventurous, looking to sort of fill that brain with those chemicals. And there are two paths you can go down. One is, of course, negative. The other is positive.
Okay. What would be some negative examples of?
Well, you know, there are some studies that say up to 40% of people in prison have undiagnosed ADHD.
Right. Okay. Right. They're doing risky behaviors to. Get those chemicals working.
Exactly. You know, I got fortunate. I was able to find positive ways to do it. And that has been very lucrative and beneficial for me and those around me.
Okay, so this is typical with most people with ADHD. You'd see them sort of trying to undertake in activities that perhaps most of us wouldn't otherwise go towards.
Exactly. You know, there are a lot of people with ADHD you can find who are skydivers. You know, there's a reason that I gravitate towards those types of things.
Okay. Is it easier to do those sort of things than the normal folk?
I think it's, I don't know if it's easier, but the payoff is better.
The payoff is better. Why is that?
Well, when I land from a skydive, my brain is so overloaded with those chemicals that I'm essentially high. So I bring my laptop to the drop zone. I take off my rig when I land. I pull out my laptop. I can write 10,000 words in 30 minutes without blinking an eye. Uh-huh. I've written all of my books that way. I've written them on airplanes. I've written them, you know, in ways that work for me. And once you learn how those ways work, you know, you really can sort of train your brain to better your life.
So figuring out when you're most on to do your work.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So ADHD, it seems like it's a growing sort of phenomenon. Is that the case? I mean, is there a high number of people being diagnosed with this?
There are a higher number of people being diagnosed for several reasons. The you know, number one, we know a lot more about it. We know what to look for. I think also it's a lot. excuse me. It's because we're seeing a lot more kids get diagnosed, and when the kids are getting diagnosed, parents are saying, "Huh, you know, that sounds familiar. I wonder if that's something I have." And you know, then they get hit. So it's not the problem is also we have to find, you know, unfortunately, big pharma tends to say, you know, hey, you know, you have a disease, you're broken, let's put you on medication. And I don't necessarily believe that. I believe there are better ways to handle ADHD, such as the ways I do and I talk about in the book. I don't think medication should be a first line of defense.
Yeah, I'd sort of agree that, and that's from my limited understanding and education on ADHD. It seems like a, you know, poor way to treat anything, really. Medication often is the less of the way. Rather than preventing it and finding the strategies that work and help you naturally, you know, overcome it. Is there a lot of people that perhaps have ADHD that don't realize it and are struggling with it?
I think there are. There's some talk that the undiagnosed of up to 25% in the U.S.
Up to 25% in the U.S. Okay, so how would we recognize that perhaps we have? What are some key signs?
Well, I mean, the number one way is really to talk to a psychologist and get tested. But, you know, there are countless ways. You know, the concept of just being sort of you can dead set focus on certain things and not focus at all on others. You can absolutely positively 100% intend to do something, forget to do it. You could feel as confident, you could radiate confidence and feel as insecure as a cat in a kennel. There are really a lot of ways out there.
Okay. I guess there's a lot of information on that online. Yeah, it sounds very interesting. So, look, let's talk about your new book, Faster Than Normal, Turbocharge Your Focus, Productivity and Success with the Secrets Behind ADHD. So lots of stuff about productivity, I believe. So talk to us a little bit about why you've come to write this book.
I believed, you know, I believe at the end of the day that we're looking at kids, some as young as 5 years old, who have ADHD, and we're negatively associating them with being broken. You know, we're treating them like they have stage 5 Ebola sometimes. Right. You know, oh, he can't pay attention at school, he's different than everyone else, let's put him on medication. Well, maybe it's not medication he needs. Maybe the kid needs to exercise a little bit and eat some protein instead of, you know, 2 bowls of chocolate frosted sugar bombs and then sitting in front of the television for an hour before school.
Yeah.
You know, and I just have a problem with the fact that we faster brains do not mean that you're broken.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And if you were driving a Honda and I gave you a Lamborghini, you know, I think you'd be very happy with it, unless if you didn't know how to drive it though, because you were used to driving a Honda, you'd crash into a tree. So one of the key things I talk about in the book is that, you know, you have to understand how to drive your faster brain. That works for people with ADHD, and it also works for people who don't have ADHD, but who just want to gain a few hours of productivity back in their lives by following the rules that people like myself use. I mean, I have several rules that are mandatory for me. I you know, things like exercise are mandatory every day. You know, eliminating choice as many ways as possible is mandatory. Understanding where my triggers are and how to avoid them. So those are not just rules for people with ADHD. Those are rules really for everyone to benefit from.
Absolutely. Obviously, I mean, it seems like humans were designed to be easily distracted. And I talked about this with another person recently, but it seems the chemicals that are involved with ADHD are certainly chemicals that we've evolved with, dopamine, serotonin, and adrenaline that you talked about recently.
We evolved with those chemicals because back in prehistoric times, you know, we'd be walking down the road and we'd see a saber-toothed tiger.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to get eaten by it, so our brains would automatically fill us up with dopamine. you know, throw it into our brains and then, you know, push most of the blood towards our legs so we could run away, give us more, open up our eyes bigger so we could see better in the dark, you know, all those kind of things. Thing is now, when we sit in front of a computer most of the day, we're pretty much not running into that many saber-toothed tigers.
Yeah.
But it's only been a couple hundred years that we're behaving like this, right?
Yeah.
We've been programmed since the beginning of time to act like that. And so it's interplaying forces at work. The forces at work are telling us not to do this, you know, not to behave like that, to sit down and be quiet in the class, are the same people, you know, are the same forces that for millions of years were telling us, okay, get ready to keep looking around so we don't get eaten.
Get ready, survival, fight or flight sort of thing.
Exactly. That's why skydiving is so great. You know, you have your brain pretty much has one choice when you're up in the air about jumping out of a plane. You know, either focus 100% or die.
Yeah. Where I'm going with this is the link between the increasingly distracted society that we live in and ADHD.
I mean, I'm not a doctor or researcher, and I can tell you that it's certainly what I know is only from my. You know, from my perspective,
yep.
I certainly know that, you know, having a million different devices at one time certainly doesn't help.
Yeah.
Right. And again, it's one of those things that I take time to really focus on, you know, and do specific things. You know, when I get to bed at night, I shut off my phone, not just mute it, but shut it off.
Yeah.
Right. Because I know that if I get up at 2 a.m. to go to the bathroom and I come back, you know, if I said, oh, let me take 5 seconds and look at my phone, I'd be up for 45 minutes, but I'm not going to stay awake and wait for the phone to turn on, that minute and a half that it takes for it to turn on. You know, so I'll keep it off, and I'll look at it when I wake up in the morning. You have to put those...
So you make some rules.
You have to. I mean, yeah. The same life rules that keep me going there, I have when I go to, you know, my closet, for instance. My closet has two sides to it, and two sides only, and, you know, one side says office or travel. And it's t-shirts and jeans. And the other side says speaking or television, and it's button-down shirts, jackets, and jeans, and that's it. All my sweaters, my vests, my suits, all that stuff is in another room entirely, because if I had to look at it every morning as I was getting dressed, oh, I wonder what happened. I remember that jacket. Laura gave me that jacket. God, I haven't talked to Laura in a while. I should look her up on Facebook. You know, 3 hours later, I haven't left the house.
Yeah, okay, because I sort of feel that, you know, the more and more that we're distracted, and, you know, in personal experience, you know, just with the phone, for example, you know, when we're waiting in line or something like that, we tend to just look at our phones these days. Everyone's out and about looking at their phones. They're at dinners with their partner looking at their phones.
Exactly.
And it seems like this overwhelmed distraction forces us to be less comfortable in the silence, less comfortable in the moments without it. And I wonder if that's increasing ADHD.
I think it's not helping. I don't know if it's increasing it, but it also suggests that there's a difference. You know, what we're doing is we're manufacturing sort of fake ways to stop our boredom.
Yeah.
The real ways to stop our boredom we're not using anymore. Things like, you know, just looking around, exploring the sunrise, looking, you know, talking to our friends, things like that. We're doing that digitally now, and that prevents us from sort of living our lives in a way.
Yeah. Okay. So we're sort of. Yeah, how do we explain that? Artificially creating our
exactly,
we're creating our excitement artificial rather way than for us, finding exactly. real excitement.
Uh-huh. Exactly, and the thing about that is when we don't find the real excitement, that takes away from the ability to build that dopamine. And look, it's been proven that when we get an email or get a text, our dopamine, we do get a hit of dopamine. So there is an addictive part of technology as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting, and certainly around, you know, you talked about children and the reason for writing this book. You know, I see a lot of kids. I've actually got some friends, and they live in the big city here in Japan, and their kids are just really hyperactive. And when they come out to our house, which is in the country, you know, I can just see them just so excited, and they're hard to calm down. But once you get them outdoors, it's just a different nature, I suppose. When they're inside, they're just crazy and out of control, and you're like, you're sort of ripping your hair out. But when you take them outdoors and just let them sort of be released, it seems to be a more calmer sort of energy.
No question about it. No, you're 100% right. 100% right.
And I think that's, you know, that's got to be a challenge for a lot of people living in the big cities, is how do they get their children, you know, out and about rather than just keeping them, like you said, indoors every day, feeding them sugary treats and putting them in the front of the TV, because TV seems to calm a lot of people down. I don't know how kids with ADHD are in front of the TV. Perhaps they're restless still, but certainly it seems to be a really good calming force, the TV.
One of the things I've always tried to explain is, you know, instead of sitting down in front of the TV, go outside and run around for an hour.
Yeah. So you talk about a lot about, you know, creativity and using our creative energy to find, I guess, I don't know if I'm right with this, but to find our healthy use of energy and find that bit of excitement. Can you talk to us a bit about creativity and why that's so important, and perhaps how we can connect with our own creativity?
Yeah, I mean, creativity is massively important, and what I find is that when I do something that ups my dopamine, like running, exercising, or skydiving, or even public speaking, you know, I am unbelievably creative at that moment in time. One of the nice things about ADHD is that while we do tend to sort of space out and zone out, we also get incredible hyper-focus. And so, you know, if you can use that hyper-focus to your advantage, I could sit down on a plane and do nothing but write for 14 hours from New York to Tokyo and land with half a book written, because we have that incredible ability to hyperfocus.
Okay.
Right? So you just, again, you need to understand how to use that and how to use that to your advantage.
How does that work, creativity and hyperfocus?
Well, once you get, again, if it's something you like to do and you've created a certain if you've created a certain way that you like to work, where you actually can work to your best ability, for instance, for me, that's, you know, on an airplane where I know I can't get up and just leave, right? So I'm able to focus on what I want to do. So I can sit down and say, okay, you know what? This is the next 14 hours of my life. Here we go.
So you know that you love writing. It's a creative process that you have connected with and you enjoy, gets you excited. And you know that the environment of a plane helps you sort of put that focus into practice.
Yep, no question about it. So again, it's knowing about what works for you, doing what it is in the way that it is, in the place that it's.
Why the airplane? I mean, don't you get distracted by, you know, the TV channel that you could watch or the people
far
around
from
you?
It. No, I mean, there's internet, but if you've ever tried using internet on a plane, you know that it sucks. And I just put on my headphones, have good music, and I just go to town.
Okay. I assume a lot of people would struggle with that still, even though they know that they can do that activity. They still perhaps
well, again,
get easily
they have
distracted.
To find the place. They have to find the place that works for them.
Okay.
You know, it might not be an airplane. For me, it's an airplane. Maybe it's maybe for you, it's a forest. I don't know.
Yeah, I certainly can, you know, get up early in the morning and spend a couple of hours writing, and that's good for me.
Well, that's the thing also. When I'm not in my, when I'm out of my element, when I'm somewhere else, you know, when I get up early and I go to, I wake up around 3:45 every morning.
Yeah.
And when I wake up, I hit the gym or I, you know, my whatever. And as soon as I do that, I am in such a great mode of focus because I've released so many chemicals that I can just sit down and I'll work. And I know that no one will come into my office till around 10:30. And I'll be in my office at 7:30. I'll have 3 solid hours to work.
What time do you go to sleep? That sounds like a pretty extreme schedule.
Around 8:30, 8:45.
Okay.
So and I really don't miss anything.
Early riser, early, yeah, early to bed.
Yep. I like and it that. Works for me. You know, I used to be worried, oh my God, I'm going to miss so much stuff. I'm not going to go out at night. Yeah, I've missed actually absolutely jack. I haven't missed anything.
You sound pretty confident in saying that too. No, I'd agree, man. I'd like to go to bed early myself.
Well, the pretty amazing thing is the majority of the people that you wind up meeting that you actually can do great work with, they're the ones who are waiting with you at the gym at 5:30 for the door to open.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Creativity, hyperfocus. It sounds similar to, you know, the state of flow. Is that correct? Is it similar? Is it the state of flow that you get into when you're on that plane and doing your writing?
That's exactly it. Very similar.
Okay.
So very similar. It's that, you know, what's the term I'm looking for? There's a, they call it runner's high.
Yeah.
Very similar.
So you just get into, yeah, okay. I like that. And that's a really good way to write books, I guess. You've written a few books as well, I believe, yeah?
Five.
Oh, wow. Okay, so how can people find, like, for the everyday Joe listening out there, how can they find activities? Do you have any practical sort of advice on how they can find these activities that where they can, you know, connect with what excites them and then how they can sort of incorporate that into their lives to their benefit?
Well, I think, it's whatever it excites them. You know, for some people, it's hunting. For some people, it's, you know, things that I'd never do. Some people love golf, tennis. I don't, you know, things I'd never do. But you have to find out what works for you. When you find it, though, remember how you feel when you do it and try to do it as much as possible. My rules are very simple. I focus on changing my brain chemistry first thing every morning each day. That's the working out thing. I fight to stay in bed and hit snooze bar. I have automated lighting that turns on before I wake up. So I sleep in my gym clothes. I get up early. By the time the alarm goes off, I'm awake. I'm ready to go. I eliminate choice whenever possible, as I told you. I know what my triggers are. I know how to avoid them. I focus on healthy. You know, pizza, junk food, they're all great dopamine releasers. The problem is they also come with tons of fat and carbs. So I try to avoid crappy food because I know I don't have...
It drains your creative energy, I suppose.
I don't have the ability to moderate. I have two speeds in my life and only two speeds. My two speeds are namaste and I'll cut a bitch. So I don't have a middle ground. So because of that, I've learned to... You know, I don't order a pizza and have two slices and put the rest in the fridge because I won't have two slices and put the rest in the fridge. I'll eat the whole pizza. So, you know, I avoid doing that. I eat healthy foods. I quit drinking, not because I go out and, you know, get drunk every night, but because when I do drink, I don't have one drink. I have six. So I've learned, you know, to avoid that.
How have you developed this? Because a lot of people can relate. I can certainly relate. Like if I have a drink, I have a lot of drinks. I don't drink every night. But when I drink, I'm serious about it, you know? And same with food and all that sort of stuff, you know, we're sort of take it to the extreme. And the same goes for, you know, when we do our creative work, we take it to the extreme. Like you can sit on a plane for 14 hours and write. How have you created those disciplines? Like how have you managed to say, yep, obviously you understand and you're quite aware. And I guess awareness is probably a key part of it. But what are the other things that you've noticed over your life that has really helped you focus on those disciplines?
Well, again, it really comes back to all or nothing. You know, I know that if I start eating crappy food, I'm going to start gaining weight. If I start gaining weight, I'm not going to go to the gym as much. I'm not going to go to the gym as much. It's this process. I don't want to start that process, so I avoid it as a whole.
Okay.
So right? Remember, there was a movie that came out in the 80s called War Games. And the greatest line, the last line of the movie, the only winning move is not to play.
Okay. So it's really about identifying your pitfalls then as well. So look, again, identifying what gets you excited, but also identifying your pitfalls is what you're talking about there.
Exactly.
Okay, I guess I'm looking for some practical sort of tips on how we can sort of identify them and then how we can...
Well, again, you know, what can get you in trouble, right? I don't know you well enough to know that. Maybe it's drinking. Maybe it's, you know, that first line of drugs. I don't know. You know, maybe it's something as simple as going on Facebook...
Yeah.
And realizing that you've just gone down the rabbit hole for 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know your, only you can know yourself, right? So you have to know what specifically sets you off on those triggers. Once you find them out, you can set up ways for yourself to avoid them. For instance, like I said, when I go on Facebook, it's pretty much an all or nothing thing. I found a great extension for Chrome. It's called Kill Newsfeed. And when I go on to Facebook to check on my mail or check on, you know, people who have responded to my professional page or whatever, the Kill Newsfeed extension on Chrome prevents Chrome from loading in all my friends' feeds.
Yep.
Right? So the only thing I see is my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That helps stops me. You know, that stops me from going down that rabbit hole.
Getting hooked into that. Yeah, okay. Getting yourself into trouble. So, yeah, again, identifying your pitfalls, identifying the things that you need to avoid because you know that they're not conducive for you to do your absolutely creative work, to do the things that get you excited. Once you identify with those things and you figure out when they arise, you then search for ways to avoid them through, you know, the apps that you use, technology, I suppose. What other sort of practices there that you use to, you know, avoid those pitfalls? I mean, you talked about, you know, limiting choice, and that's a huge one. Perhaps you can maybe elaborate on that a little bit, you know, making sure that there is less choice so you don't have that distraction.
Well, exactly. So, you know, I don't put myself in positions where I could get distracted or go down rabbit holes. For instance, you know, my speaking contract, I speak all around the world to corporations all around the world. My contract is, you know, I'll speak, you'll pay me, I pay my travel. Except in Las Vegas, where I have a rider on my contract that says that I don't have to be on the ground from wheels down to wheels up for more than 8 hours.
Yep.
Which means that I'll only do a lunchtime keynote. Is anything terrible going to happen when I go to, you know, when I go to Vegas? Am I going to blow my kids' college fund? Probably not. But why put myself in that position?
Uh-huh.
So let's avoid it.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. So you really create a lot of these rules around your pitfalls and things that you need to avoid.
Well, it's what I do to make my. Certainly not. But I'm certainly, you know, I know myself, and I know what goes. I know what I'm good at, and I know what I'm bad at, and I know how to avoid the things that I'm bad at, and I know how to, you know, sort of work the things that I'm good at.
Okay. How old are you, Nick? Can I ask?
I am 45.
Okay.
And I didn't get diagnosed till 35, so I didn't really know about any of this. You know, I sort of really learned it in the past.
Okay, so. What age did you start really going, geez, I really got to stop doing these behaviors because they're just really limiting to, you know, my creativity and executing my ideas and moving forward in a meaningful manner in life?
Probably around 35.
Okay. And when did you cut out drinking and things like that around that
age? I quit drinking about 2.5 years ago, actually.
Okay. So for the last 10 years, let's say, you've really been working on improving your practices so you can avoid those pitfalls and really focus on your creative ideas and executing those.
I want to focus on being in a better place and being happier and being, you know, more useful to society, as it were. You know, my daughter, she loves watching Thomas the Tank Engine, and the big thing about the Thomas trains is that they love to be useful. They love to be told they're useful, right? I like that feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people do. And I think a lot of people are, you know, to some point aware of how they're living their life and which direction they really want to go in. But perhaps struggling to go in that direction. And this is why I think this is an important conversation, because I think that's relative to everyone. I don't think anyone's alone in that sense. I think we're all, you know, looking for more meaning in life. And I think we all know the struggles that we have and we wish to avoid them, but still find it difficult to avoid them. We still find ourselves unable to avoid those distractions that are perhaps unhealthy rather than going towards those things that get us excited.
Well, and that's the key. You know, when you get to the point where you want to change it, you'll change it. And not a moment sooner.
Yeah. Do you think people are, again, this is perhaps a big assumption that we could make, but do you think people are struggling to really connect with that stuff that gets them excited, really to connect with that creative energy?
I think there are a lot of people who are told they have to be one certain way.
Yeah.
And
that's a part of the, you know, fitting in with the status quo and conformity and...
Well, that's the thing. And when they realize they don't have to be that one way, right, you know, it's sometimes they realize that too late. I just, essentially at the end of the day, and pardon my French here, I just stopped giving a fuck about what other people thought.
Yeah, that's good.
You know?
It's good advice.
it really helped. I won't lie, it really, really helped.
Did you have because this might be something that comes up, is that some people find it easier to do it than others because, you know, they've got more resources behind them to break free, you know, to do the things that excite them, where other people, you know, I have to work a job, I'm busy, I don't have enough time for that creative energy and things that get me excited, which, you know, might be more of an excuse than anything. But is that the case? Do you think there is some element of truth behind that?
I think that there is definitely an element of truth in that. You know, a lot of times we're stuck in these jobs that we don't love. We're stuck doing things that we have to do because we've been told that's the way it's been done.
Yeah, right? that's just in society. That's the way we've gone through our education. We've sort of been molded to fit
No
that.
Question about it, yeah.
And then it is hard to break free, isn't it?
No question about it. And, you know, a lot of times you want to break free and you're told, oh, that's ridiculous, you're going to fail. Da, da, da. One of the nice things about ADHD is that we tend to just do things. We don't tend to think about it. You know, a lot of the mistakes that people make, or, you know, they start a company and it doesn't work. And the reason it fails a lot of times is because people don't, they wind up questioning, oh, should I do this? Or let me review it a little more, you know, and it dies somewhere in there.
Okay.
So I found that people with ADHD tend to not waste time figuring out, well, what happened? You know, every company I've started, I've just sort of went out and started, right? If it goes wrong, okay, I failed, I'll start another one. But, you know, I've never waited and said, oh, I wonder what would happen if. And so that helps a lot.
So you just go out there and take action and sort of don't give a fuck.
Exactly.
And I guess that's the difference between a lot of people. I mean, people with ADHD might have that ease to just not care and not give a fuck and be a little bit less worried about, you know, taking risk and the uncertainty that comes with, you know, pursuing their creative ideas. Whereas the normal folk that we've been conditioned in this way of society to be molded and say, oh, this is normal, this is how we should be living our life, and, you know, it's too risky to do other things and you know, roll the dice, I guess, in a sense. I guess that mindset that you have with ADHD perhaps can give us a lot of secrets into a better mindset, you know, to really push ourselves towards those creative ideas and things that get us excited. Not giving a fuck.
Exactly. You know, and again, at the end of the day, it really, for me, is really about making sure that I am, you know, doing what works for me. And look, I'm not saying it's always easy. I'm not saying it's always fun. I do what's best for me and what I enjoy doing as much as possible.
Okay. So how do people stop caring about what other people think and just do what they want?
It's not easy in the slightest. It's very not easy in the slightest. But, you know, over time, it does become easier when you realize that, you know, one of the things I realize is that the people who might have comments about me, chances are they are not paying my mortgage.
Yep. Yep. Pretty true.
You know, so you got to realize that, you know, how are these people affecting my life? And if not, what am I waiting for?
Do you do a lot of like mindfulness practices or reflecting activities?
I've tried. It's not easy.
Doesn't work.
It does sometimes. It's not as easy as it is for other people because, you know, it's somewhat hard sometimes to shut our brains off.
How do you stop to just really connect with, hey, is this the right path that I'm going on? Is this really what's important to my life and my objectives?
Oh, well, I have those questions to myself all the time. I don't know. I wouldn't call that mindfulness. It might be mindfulness, but I never really thought of it like that. You know, those questions I answer to myself come when I'm on a run. They come when I'm, you know, when I'm 10 miles into a run and I'm just thinking about what's going on in the world.
Yeah, because I'm just wondering if you're like just always about, you know, taking action and go.
I definitely check and make sure I'm doing the right thing. There's no question about that.
Okay, so you find, you know, your exercise time is a good time for self-reflection.
Yeah, it's a great way to sort of look into my brain and see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay. Do you get yourself in a bit of trouble just by going and taking action?
I wouldn't say trouble. It certainly helped.
Yeah?
It certainly helped. You know, I'm a big believer in, again, just sort of that way of life, as it were, and it works for me. You know, I can't say that it works for everyone, but it definitely works for me.
Okay. Cool. Well, it sounds very interesting. Is there anything from the book that perhaps you'd like to talk on before we go into these other questions?
I think the best answer I can give is just, you know, again, we are not broken. People have to remember we are not broken.
Yeah. I reckon by, you know, your book will obviously give us a lot of insights to people without ADHD into how to be more productive as well. It sounds like, you know, the ideas you've shared today certainly are helpful.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
So what, first question that I've got for you is rituals or routines that you believe contribute to your success. You've mentioned exercise already, and obviously that's something that it sounds like you do first thing in the day.
It was exercise has to happen first thing in the morning, no question about it.
Yep.
It is very much about exercise. It's about, again, elimination of choice, about allowing myself to get into certain patterns that work for me and avoiding the patterns that don't.
On that, getting into the patterns, I guess, you know, routines that work for you and the routines that don't, what is, how do you avoid becoming complacent? Because often routines and habits can make us a bit more complacent if we don't, you know, bring our attention to them constantly.
I think it's good to do a self-evaluation every once in a while. You know, for me, I remember about 3 years ago, I looked in the mirror and I didn't like what I saw looking back at me. I was bloated. I was overweight. I wasn't feeling good. I wasn't happy. And, you know, it was that moment where I said, things have to change. And, you know, it's the oxygen mask theory. If you're not taking care of yourself first, it's impossible to help others.
Yeah, yeah.
So you need to constantly be focused on, am I doing the right thing for myself?
Okay. What advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
Stop caring so much about what other people think and just live your life.
And what is your meaning of success?
My meaning of success is having enough money not to waste time and having enough money to be able to help other people in any way I choose.
Okay, cool. Number one piece of productivity advice. It's a big one.
Yeah, number one piece of productivity advice. Get out of your comfort zone from where you're used to working and work someplace else where you're not surrounded by the things that you're used to working around. You know, if you're, when I'm on a plane, I don't have my cat to come over and say hi, I don't have my kid, I'm just focused.
Yeah, good. Someone looking to make some change out there in their life, any level of change, what sort of advice would you give them? What's the first step?
Understand why you want to do it, not just that you have to do it, understand why you want to, and then start visualizing what the end result is going to be. You know, we tend to make we tend to make resolutions where we, okay, I'm going to lose 30 pounds next month. No, that's not going to happen. Focus on how you want to feel at the end of the day. You know, small moves work a lot better than big moves.
Okay, so when you talk about the visualization process, is that something that you do in that short term? So, look, I want to lose some weight. How can I do that today? Or do you actually look forward and go, you know, how do I want to look and feel at Christmas or in 6 months' time?
That's it. How do I want to look? Because if I can say I don't want to feel at Christmas, but then what are the steps I'm going to do to get there? So, right? And I'm going to sit down and map that out.
So you visualize it first and then work backwards from there? Go, okay, well, this is how I really want to look and feel and how I want to be, how can I make that happen?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's really about understanding, you know, why do I get up so early? Because I know that when I go to sleep at the end of the night, I want to feel amazing. I want to feel like I've done everything. I want to feel completely exhausted, like I had a very successful day. The only way to do that is to start very early. So when I want to stay in bed and hit the snooze bar, I think about that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, a bit of the motivation to get you active and into your day. What is your favorite food?
Well, it is definitely pizza, you know, so I have to be aware of that and try to avoid it. Other than that, I'm partial to a very good steak.
Okay. Favorite leisure activity?
Skydiving.
How long have you been skydiving for?
I got my license in 2005.
Okay. Is it a tricky process to go through that?
It was 25 jumps to actually get your license. Then you're on your own. You could jump anywhere in the world. I've jumped on multiple continents. It's a blast.
It's a very expensive hobby, I'd assume.
Actually, once you get your license, it's only about $25 a jump.
Really?
Yep.
I should get my license.
Of course, it's, you know, getting your license and buying the gear and everything will run you about $10,000 US.
Well, that's worthwhile.
That's a one-time charge. Once you get that, yeah, $25-$30 a jump.
Why not? People that spend a lot more on cars and stuff.
No question about it.
Yeah, cool. What's your favorite book? Have you read one recently that you'd like to recommend or one all-time favorite?
I think one of my favorites is a book called, let me make sure I get the title right. Obviously, other than mine, a book called The Warrior Elite, The Forging of Class 228. It's a firsthand account of someone going through the Navy SEAL boot camp program. Just makes me realize that every time I think I can't do something, there's a lot more that I can do. And then, what else do I love? Great fiction book called Vertical Run about a guy being hunted, trapped in a big high-rise office building. And then I think my all-time favorite is They Can Kill You, But They Can't Eat You, a biography of a woman named Dawn Steele, who was the first female head of production at Paramount.
I'll stick them in the show notes, guys, to check them out too if you'd be interested to pick up those. And I'll stick a copy of Peter's book in there as well, so Faster Than Normal.
Please
So
do, yeah.
certainly check it out, guys, and pick up yourself a copy using the links at Hidden Why you're supporting the show. Do you have a favorite quote?
If you can't change the people around you, change the people around you.
Hello. How do you change the people around you?
Well, that's the thing, you know, people around you, if they're not doing what you want or you're not gelling with them, move. You know, you're not a tree.
Yeah. So you sort of don't really focus on changing the people around you. You just focus on being around the people that you want to be with.
Well, I try to change the people around me, and if it doesn't work, yeah, see ya.
So just through your behavior, through your influence,
Through
everything
the
you
way I
do.
live my life. You know, life is too short to sit there
Yeah.
with people that waste your time.
Do you believe we all have a why, a purpose?
I think so. I don't think a ton of us know it, but I do believe we do. We all do.
Okay, and what does living life with passion and purpose mean to you?
Helping people.
Okay. The last question I want to ask you is around sort of your deeper motivation for everything that you do in life. So what is that motivation for you? What is the reason why you do everything you do? What gets you out of bed? What gets you excited? What's the reason for that drive?
I enjoy creating change. You know, I'm one of the I'm one of the people that you know, if you tell me that I can't do something, I'm gonna do it just to prove you wrong. But I really do enjoy helping people. I enjoy making a change. I enjoy letting people realize that they could do better, that there is, you know, we shouldn't be satisfied with the status quo just because it's easy.
Yeah. So what is it about, helping others make that change? And I mean, I think that's profoundly wonderful, and I think it's really important to help people make that change because a lot of people are suffering in their lives because they don't realize there's other choice. What is it about that for you particularly that gives you the motivation? What is it, more on a deeper level?
I think a lot of it is growing up as a kid who got, you know, made fun of and beaten up a lot as a kid. There were times where I wasn't sure I could do anything, and to see myself in this position, it makes me want to keep moving forward.
Okay, does it provide you some level of fulfillment or something deeper that that really is the path forward? Really is the goal?
I think just every day, you know, when I go to bed at night, was I useful? Did I do something good? Did I help a person, a child, an animal, that I'd make the world a little better. You know, I'm not going to change the world by myself, but look at it this way. You know the butterfly effect, right? Like we go back in time, we step on a butterfly, it vastly changes everything,
Yeah.
right? That little tiny small move, it changes the future, right? Why don't we think about the fact that a little tiny small move today could actually change our future for the positive a lot tomorrow?
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it. Absolutely. And that gives you probably a little bit of motivation to do a little bit more today. So let's wrap it up there. I think that's a good point to wrap it up. How can people connect with you and find out more about what you do and your work?
My entire life is at shankman.com. My mastermind group is shankminds.com. The book is fasterthannormal.com. And I am at Peter Shankman on all the socials.
Easy, easy. So, well, thank you, Peter, for coming on the show, guys. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. Peter, any final words?
I had a blast on the show. I would love to reach out. Everyone can feel free to connect. I'm always happy to talk with them.
Absolutely. Guys, check it all out, thehiddenwhy.com, the show notes and the links in there. Please use that as best you can. And until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon. There you go, guys, my interview with Peter Shankman. What did you think? Let us know. Jump into thehiddenwhy.com, leave your comments in the comments field. Reach out to Peter as well. Thank you for coming on the show. And if you're interested in his book, sounds like a great read. I haven't read it yet, but I've got a copy here as well, so I'm ready to read it. Pick up a copy using the links at thehiddenwhy.com. It helps support the show using the Amazon links. You can do all your purchasing online there, and certainly it does help me here produce what I'm producing with The Hidden Why. I'm ad-free. Not that I really want to promote that. This is just what I do. I enjoy it, and that's why I do it. So I don't really care for all that stuff, at least at this stage. Anyway, that might all change. I also want to apologize, guys. The audio quality, still haven't figured it out. I've just reinstalled my system and I've done another interview, not using my Blue Yeti microphone. I've used my computer internal microphone, so I think that's sort of affected, at least that's what I think it is. That's affected the audio quality there slightly. Hopefully it hasn't distracted you from the value of this interview today with Peter Shankman. Anyway, for what it's worth, apologise. Other than that, guys, check it all out, thehiddenwire.com. You can check out all my work there online. You can also check out my book, which will be released some stage this year. It's called The Ultimate Life Map. It's really about going on a purposeful journey towards living with greater freedom, fulfillment, and happiness. So you can check that out at theultimatelifemap.com. Other than that, guys, just connect with me. Let me know what you think. If you've got any questions, concerns, suggestions, etc., you can reach me at my email address that's available online at thehiddenwire.com. Other than that, guys, you know what to do. Go out there, breathe more passion into every single moment. Do everything with greater purpose, and in doing so, discover your hidden why. This is The Hidden Why. My name is Lee Muddlesy, signing out.